Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 427, recorded July 14th, 2024.
And today we're finishing off Sons of Star Trek, the surprising miniseries. Because they just took, what, four random Starfleet kids? Or they're not even in Starfleet, just kids of Starfleet.
Star Trek. The Star Trek. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, except for Q.
Okay. Yeah.
But yes, everybody else. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah,
So young adults.
I did not think I was going to like it, but I ended up liking it. So.
Yeah, and I really like the first two issues, and I like the third issue. And then this last one, I still liked it. I liked it. It's just that there's certain things about it that are less than ideal. So let me just put it that way.
It jumped the shark.
I don't want to be too negative about it because it's good. I like the series. There are just a few things that happened in the last issue that I'm not too crazy about.
All right. Well, we'll have something to talk about then.
Yes, we will. Something to disagree on.
Yep. We don't have any preamble. We can just jump right into it if you're ready.
Yeah, I think so. I'm doing issue number 3, Sons of Star Trek. Published date, June 2024. Creative team is writer Morgan Hampton, artist Angel Hernandez, colorist Nick Filardi, letters by Clayton Cowles, design and production Neil Yataki, group editor Heather Antos, assistant editor Vanessa Real, editorial assistant Cassandra Jones. So a lot of the same people that have been involved in the other issues. Maybe even all the same. I don't know. Three covers. Cover A features Jake and Captain Ducat in the diamond-shaped, and kind of like a diamond-shaped center cutout kind of thing on the cover. In the upper left-hand corner is Q Jr. In the upper right-hand corner is Alexander firing a phaser with a Breen soldier behind and in front of him. Mariner from Lower Decks is in the lower right-hand corner. Commander Shaw and Nog are together working on some panel or something. Art by Jake Bartok. Cover B features Nog and Commander Shaw while they are working on the warp core as a Breen soldier enters engineering behind them. Art by Aaron Harvey. The retailer incentive cover presents a photograph of Rom. So it's art, it's drawn, but it presents what looks like a photograph. And in the photograph, paper photograph that's being held by someone with a green thumbnail. It's a photograph of Rom, Daddy Rom, beaming with delight, holding up a T-shirt that Nog gave him. The shirt says, "My son and my Latinum goes to Starfleet Academy." So a nice little play on shirts that you may have seen in our current day and age. Uncle Quark is behind them, showing more annoyance than anything else on his face. The art is by Andy Price. So it's cute. It's cute. Nog is recording a log entry about his days as an engineer on the USS Almany after the Dominion War. The main point is no one really used him for what he could do. They just cared about what he had done, what he had done in the Dominion War, what he did working with Captain Sisko on DS9. Nog was not happy with how his career was going. But all that changed when he was in engineering with Captain Shaw, who was asking Nog how to fix the engine that destroyed its dilithium during Jadzia's risky Kurazan maneuver. Nog found out that many Ferengi are in this alternate dimension Starfleet, and some of them are excellent creative engineers. Finally, someone was tapping Nog for what he could do. But how does he know how to fix this particular problem, since the technology is not quite what he's used to? Finally, Nog proposes to use a Theta Matrix compositor to recrystallize the ship's ruined dilithium. Shaw never heard of a Theta Matrix compositor before, but he is game to try to construct one. Suddenly, a door to engineering swooshes open, but no one is there. They figure out a Breen using some kind of personal cloaking device must have just entered engineering. With his amazingly sensitive ears, Nog is able to detect where the Breen is and pushes Shaw out of the way of a directed energy beam. Before the Breen can take another shot, Alexander blasts him. The cloak stops and they can see the dead Breen soldier on the deck. Alexander figures out he can use the Breen soldier's helmet to see heat signatures of the Breen even when they are cloaked. This will come in handy. Shaw figures the Breen did not shoot their helpless Federation ship out of space before, because the Breen ship Chimera is on its way to add a new Starfleet warp core to its over-the-top power generation capabilities. Apparently, this Chimera has many Starfleet warp cores in it, producing the huge ship's power. Nog sees the Breen soldier has a Thoron generator in his belt that masked their presence from tricorder scans, but that Thoron can also be used to recrystallize the ship's dilithium. Meanwhile, in Dukat's briefing room, Q Jr. is snapping his fingers repeatedly, but can't seem to make anything happen with his power of his mind. No more magic reset button for Jake and his friends. Things are gonna get real. Captain Dukat and his senior staff are planning their next move, given the news that the Chimera is likely on its way to their position to take possession of their warp core. Dukat puts forward the idea of rigging their warp core with explosives, then ejecting it in the hope the Chimera will take it into its hull and make use of it. When they do that, they will trigger the explosives and destroy the monstrous Breen ship from the inside. Since destroying the warp core will disable their ship and help could be weeks away, Jake suggests putting the crew's brightest minds on getting Q Jr.'s power back. After that, Q Jr. can bring anything into existence and give them less risky options. Dukat says, "No!" and even gets scary angry with those red eyes of his. He will not take any of his top people that need to prepare for the Chimera's arrival on a fool's errand to figure out a way to fix Pinocchio. Jadzia gives Q Jr. a pep talk, and his frustration with losing his powers mount. In engineering, Alexander and Commander Shaw don the Breen helmets, while Nog takes the Breen rifle, since the helmets will not fit his oversized lobes. Before leaving to help others, Alexander confides in Nog, this dimension feels more like home than his original home dimension. Nog and Shaw get back to work recrystallizing the dilithium. Before they finish, four additional Breens enter the engineering, and Shaw is hit. With his super hearing, the little Ferengi is able to detect the overconfident, invisible Breen and shoots all of them. Meanwhile, on another part of the ship, Alexander comes up behind four invisible Breen and blasts them all. On the bridge, Dukat apologizes to Jake for his outburst earlier, but he says his crew and the Federation are all that matters to him. He must protect them both at all costs. After the long conversation, Dukat promises to do everything he and his crew can to get Jake and his friends back to their home dimension. Back in engineering, it's Nog and his sharp hearing 5 and the invisible Breen 0. Oh, and he got the warp core working again. On the bridge, a cloaked Breen is able to get into the bridge without getting shot. Then Alexander enters with his helmet on and sees the Breen soldier. Alexander ends up shooting the cloaked Breen, but before he can do that, he ends up killing Captain Ducat. Alexander hands his helmet to Morn and Tuvix, who want to see if they can somehow tie that into the ship's system and let more people see the Breen. Look out! The Breen is not quite dead and raises his rifle. Events start happening all too fast. Q Jr. snaps his fingers, but again, it has no effect. The Breen shoots Captain Ducat square in the chest. To be continued.
Well, that was the poop hitting the fan for sure.
Oh, yeah. So we lost Ducat. There you go.
Definitely looks that way.
Yes. So earlier when Ducat was like getting overwrought about taking people's time away to try to figure out what's the deal with Q Jr., and then him saying, you know, he'll do anything to protect his crew. I had the feeling Ducat was going to get killed, but I thought it would happen in issue four, not in this issue.
Right.
But it did.
Yep, it doesn't look like he's going to make it.
No, but we will not know for sure until the next issue.
Exactly. But yeah, so you like this issue or no?
Yeah, this issue is fine. I mean, it's fine, sure. The idea that Mariner is going to take over now, I mean, she is first officer, right?
Right.
Should be interesting. I thought it was kind of odd that all of a sudden at the beginning of this issue, Hugh Jr. lost his powers. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, was that acknowledged in the previous issue? Because I didn't go back and reread it, but I did not remember that when I was reading the book.
I don't think so. I think Hugh Jr. was normal at the end of the last issue. I don't think they acknowledged anything about him having problems with his powers.
Right.
So this was a bit of a revelation, I believe, in the third issue.
Yeah. So,
and it seems a bit random.
Right.
Unless, of course, the Continuum or maybe Q himself is behind it.
Right. Or did the Curzon maneuver somehow take away his powers?
Oh. I think the Curzon maneuver is amazing in itself. The idea of making it even more amazing by it being responsible for Q Jr.'s loss. That would be stretching it, but yeah, could be.
So yeah, that, I mean, at least that's what I was thinking.
Sure.
At least in this issue, I was like, oh, was it the Curzon thing?
Right.
So speaking of the Curzon maneuver, after they do the maneuver, they said last issue that they'll be dead in the water if they do it, but they did it anyways to take out that Breen ship.
Yep.
Man, to this issue shows them Nog and Shaw in engineering, but it is massive and it has like these giant pistons and looks like foam everywhere. I didn't know what I was looking at, to tell you the truth, because it's something I've never seen in Star Trek before.
Yeah. So obviously in this dimension, the technology is quite different. I agree.
Is it steam powered?
Well, is that supposed to be like coolant? Coolant that's
like leaking out everywhere,
or was purposely sprayed because the whole thing overtaxed itself and was going to blow apart, and so that foam is like coolant or something? I don't know.
Wouldn't it be nice if they explained that?
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, the whole idea that engineering is like 15 times bigger in this dimension than in any other Star Trek story.
Yeah, it's even bigger than the Kelvin engineering, which was already huge.
Exactly. I was totally wondering if this comic book was produced by J.J. Abrams. Yes.
So do we ever actually see the outside of the ship? I don't remember what class this ship is. Is it one we're familiar with?
No. It's at least I've never seen it before. And I've seen a lot of them. So who knows? Maybe it's something close to something in Star Trek Online. But other than that, I don't think it's an established one within the video shows.
The movie universes or the
movie, TV, you know, whatever. I don't think it's from any of that. But there's a ton of designs from Star Trek Online.
Right, right. Yeah, they were really pumping them out there for a while.
Right. Even that ship that popped up at the end of Picard season one, that there were like 100 of them.
Yeah.
That originally was a design that I think Doug Drexler did, that he had originally done it for Star Trek Online or something. And then at the last minute, they repurposed it.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that.
Or something like that. Yeah. So there's tons of great designs in Star Trek Online. So maybe it's a little bit like one of those. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, is it a super huge ship? And the answer to that is, I don't know. I mean, the only super huge ship I know of is what, the Enterprise F, right? Which was massive. The one Picard used during the whole Romulan, the threat to Romulus.
Oh, how big is that one?
The Inquiry. Was it Inquiry class or was that the ship? I forgot. It's Inquiry something. But that's
Odyssey or something, right?
Oh, was it the Odyssey? Okay, so maybe it's an Inquiry class, but it's the Odyssey? Anyway, whatever
it is. Comic book it was, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it was, that's a super huge ship. Much bigger than the Enterprise F. For that matter. It's huge. I mean, it's so huge, it has what's essentially a Defiant in its butt.
Right, right. You've mentioned that before.
Yes, exactly. So you've got something that's almost as powerful as Defiant as a secondary ship. That's where you normally have the shuttle hangar bay in most ships before. This thing's huge. That thing's huge. Now, that thing's engineering section, I don't think we ever saw. But, you know, it could be something this big, maybe.
I doubt it.
It's big.
This is just too big.
Yeah, it's huge. Yep. Anywho.
So I didn't really care for the idea that they could just take the masks off. I mean, of the Breen and then put on the masks and for two reasons. One, it just seems like it's too easy, right? It's like, of course they would be able to see each other. So why do you act surprised that you could take the mask off and look? But then also, wouldn't you think that there would be some safeguards or something in there to keep somebody from doing it?
That the Breen would have there?
Right.
Yeah, could be.
Some like retinal checking to make sure that it's the assigned Breen using it and not
exactly
some spy.
Like those smart guns they have today, where supposedly somehow it takes a biometric reading of you and the trigger won't work if you don't.
I think that was Judge Dredd.
Well, there are real guns that do that.
I know.
But yes, Judge Dredd probably has that.
So anyway,
you know, at first, I didn't quite get what Alexander was saying about the heat vision.
Right.
So I thought it was going to turn him invisible or something, like the cloak was built into the helmet, and it's like, hey, I can still see Alexander. What's going on? And it's like, oh, you idiot. Read more closely. It just gives him heat vision, like a predator.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And in the next issue, they're like, well, why don't we use the same technology to let everybody see them, right? Which I thought was a little odd that they don't come up with that idea right away, like in this meeting. Doesn't it seem like kind of a no-brainer that you would want to reverse engineer the helmets? And they have a bunch of them, right? He took out like four people, right? Four Breen. But they only use one of the helmets. So maybe the
Shaw used one. Shaw used one.
Not here. He uses one later after another one. Right?
Well, okay. So this issue...
this issue, Alexander's the only one that uses one.
Okay.
And then Shaw uses one in the next issue. Right?
Okay. I thought Shaw was shot in this issue.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. He uses it later. After they take out more.
Later in the issue.
Nog uses his super hearing to be able to take out some. And then
exactly.
That's right. That's right.
Well, you know, we have heat vision now. I mean, you can buy a little camera, you know, a little IR camera with a little screen, and it'll show you different colors for different heat levels. So we got that now. The idea that, you know, 300 years in the future, they don't have something like that seems a little odd. But, and another thing is, you know, IR is just another bandwidth of visible light. So if you're able to, if your cloak can get around visible light, then this isn't like it would be much of a stretch to get around infrared. But whatever.
Well, no matter what, you can't get rid of sound unless you have some sort of sound dampener.
True.
So
those ample lobes of Nog, yes.
Yeah.
That's quite good. Quite good. Of course, he was really leaning on that a lot, but hey, it works. Why not?
Yep, exactly.
I really liked the drawing of Captain Decott when he was getting really pissed and, you know, those red eyes were there. I thought that was like, ooh. I mean, even though he's a good guy in this one, he's still scary looking when he gets angry.
Right. Yeah, I love the Cardassian makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that whole neck thing, it just makes him look intimidating.
You like the spoon? The forehead spoon?
The spoon's a little weird, but I do like it.
Yeah, it is good makeup. It's a nice alien design.
Right. Yeah, and it makes him look... I mean, maybe even more menacing than a Klingon, as far as like when you just, if you just saw him in an episode, you'd be like, ooh, Cardassian looks a little bit more creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they're taking, and I think they're taking Cobras as some of the inspiration.
Right.
For them. So Cobras are kind of, you know, scary. So I think that was a good choice. I think that works.
But did Dukat have red eyes? I don't remember him having red eyes in the show.
Well, I don't really remember that either, except maybe when he was
the Paw Wraith was in him? Or the,
that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when the Paw Wraith, definitely then probably he had red eyes.
Right.
But then I looked into this, you know, multiple issues from this run, and he's got red eyes in all of them.
Hmm. Okay.
So I took a look at issue 1 and 2 and said, oh, he's got red eyes. So maybe he always had red eyes. I don't know.
I think I would have noticed that back in the old days.
Yeah, well, we could take a look at a DS9 episode. I don't know. I mean, he was in them enough.
Right.
The quintessential bad guy of DS9.
Yeah, I always liked it when they were kind of friends, kind of there in the middle. The middle seasons before the Dominion War.
Well, Decott was turning. I mean, you actually saw stories where Decott actually did a couple good things.
Right.
So they were softening him a bit. That whole thing about his daughter or something.
Right.
And there was a grudging mutual respect to some degree between him and Sisko, I think.
Right.
But then all that went out the window, all out the window in the last season.
Yeah, once he killed Jedzia, it was just like, there's no redeeming him anymore.
No. His redemption arc is over.
He is bad.
Yeah, bad to the bone.
So uniforms of this universe, I'm pretty sure we talked about it last time, but just bringing it up again. I love the design. The only thing I don't like is the comm badge with that extra little... pointy bits looking like they're coming out the back.
Okay, so you're fine with the circle because and behind the swoosh.
Yeah.
Because that's, of course, the motion picture. But it's the extra little bit they've got you don't like.
I don't like
it.
Right. And I love the delta being on the collar and stuff. I think that's kind of a cool way to do rank and stuff. Even though they also have the braid around the arm, which is more of a Taz thing. But yeah, no, I really like the uniform except for those pointy bits. What about you?
Oh yeah, I like the uniforms here. I think, like I might have mentioned before, I like these uniforms a lot better than those baggy things they use in Star Trek 2022.
Oh, the Theseus uniforms?
Exactly. The Theseus uniforms are just too baggy.
Right. And asymmetrical, and it has that line going down one side and not the other side. Yeah, I'm not a fan of those.
Yeah, I like these a lot better.
So is this the one where we found out that Jadzia in this universe didn't get to... She was rejected as a symbiote, or is that next issue? Yeah, it was this
one. Good question.
Yeah.
Good question. Oh, okay, it was this one? Yeah.
It was this one.
Yeah, so she gave her backstory.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people giving their backstories.
Right, which I like.
And it is. And another one that's cool is when we find out that Morn is the comms officer. So maybe they mentioned this before, but they said it explicitly in this one. And it's like, Morn, the guy that you never heard talk, is the comms officer? I like that.
I did too.
I like that.
It's always implied that he's chatting away.
Chatterbox?
Just off screen, yeah. During Deep Space Nine.
But we never hear it. He just won't stop talking.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good... They're continuing the joke from the show.
Yeah.
So that's good. But so many things aren't the same. So we'll talk about it when we get to the next issue, but... There are things about the Breen that are not the same that I think are fun is, you know, at the first, it just slapped me upside the head how they were doing revisionism on what the Breen are. And then it's like, oh, this is another dimension. Okay.
Right.
Anybody could be different. Okay, fine. So that's their card to do a revision on anybody or anything. Okay, fine. Huge engineering decks, you characters that have a different backstory and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. Can you imagine Nog going back to the, if they make it to the, back to the Prime Universe, when he makes it back, he's like, I'm going to look up our universe's Shaw. I'm sure he's just a nice guy. Just like this other universe's Shaw.
Ah.
And then finds out that the Shaw in their universe is kind of a jerk.
Who likes Malbec? Yes.
So, yeah. To me, Shaw was. I mean, I. He looks like the actor, but he does not come across as Shaw as far as what we saw in Picard. To me,
no.
Mariner does. I could see Mariner. This seems like the same Mariner, just more serious. But Shaw, I'm like, this is just a different person who just happens to have a similar name and face.
Right. And if he didn't go through that Borg thing, that was actually at Wolf 359?
Yeah, right.
Okay. So if he didn't go through
maybe
that,
he'd be more mellow.
Right. I think it was the PSD from Wolf 359 that helped make him such a poo-poo head.
All right. And then my last comment on this one is they're able to revitalize or create dilithium.
Recrystallize?
Yeah.
Right.
So if this is something that Nog knew back here, then why could in the 32nd century they not do the same thing with the dilithium that was destroyed from the burn?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, that's a great question. However, I think the whole idea of using theta radiation to recrystallize dilithium, I think that might have come up in a TNG or something like that episode.
Right. Probably a Deep Space Nine.
Or Deep Space Nine. It's one of them. Right. I think one of them, they established that you could do that, which is an excellent question about in Discovery, where something happened way post TNG and Deep Space Nine and everything, where using dilithium just burned everything.
Right.
But even if you could recrystallize it, I mean, even if you dug it out of the ground, I mean...
I thought the whole thing was that it was destroyed, but I'm saying when Discovery came back, if they could just mm-hmm. use their dilithium to grow more, then why didn't they try to do that instead of what they did do there in season three?
Okay. Well, maybe you need to actually have the fractured dilithium, mm-hmm. and they didn't have the fractured dilithium to recrystallize it.
Mm,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, continuity only goes so far, especially with the newer stuff.
Right.
As JJ has said, do not let continuity get in the way of a cool thing.
Right.
Or common sense.
All right. What else you got?
I just got two brief things. Captain Dukat's whole idea of jettisoning the warp core. What's going to stop the Chimera from blasting them? So they eject the warp core. Sure, they want to get the warp core, but they can multitask. So they can grab the warp core with a tractor beam and just totally annihilate the ship.
Right.
So what's going to stop them from doing that, Dukat?
And why does a ship need multiple warp cores? Because they're saying that this Chimera is stealing all these warp cores from Federation ships.
Yep.
What's it doing with them? Is it using them or are they just a collection?
I think they're using them. I think they were insinuating that this is such a huge, super powerful ship that they're collecting all the warp cores. Mm. Now, you'd think that the Breen have their own warp cores. Their own warp core technology. They can build their own warp cores. So when you built this super huge ship, was that your game plan? You were going to steal it all from destroyed Federation ships?
Federation ships, yeah.
Or you were going to build them on your own? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
And why is this thing so super huge? I mean, we're going to find something out in the next issue that may have a bigger justification for a super huge ship. But is it strictly just from a tactical standpoint? The Breen build the biggest, baddest ship. So for battle situations. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
All right, we'll find out.
Yeah. And my last thing is at the beginning of the issue where Hugh Jr. is like constantly snapping his fingers. It's just not working. And it's like, it was a little funny. I took it as being just a little funny. So they're having a serious conversation. And then in the background, you know, Q still snapping his fingers with frustration. I took that as a little humorous.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you suddenly lost your powers, you would be just trying and trying and trying.
Yes, you probably would. Although at some point you may say, hey, repeating the same thing and getting the same results is the definition of insanity. Maybe I should stop now. But anyway. Yep. Very handy to, you know, obviously Q losing his powers really, you know, moves the stakes up quite a bit.
Right.
Quite a bit. Which is good. I mean, it's you want an adventure. That's what Star Trek is. It's an adventure series. So it definitely makes the stakes a lot higher. Coincidence? I think so. Anyway, that's all I have to say about this.
That's it? All right.
That's it. I'm done.
All right. Well, let's move on to 4 then. The finale. So this has 3 covers. The first one is by Jake Bartok, and it shows Jake. And then behind him, we see Alexander, Nog, Q Jr., and what's
Ungawa?
Her name? Ungawa, that's it. From Next Generation. So she's there, too, for some reason. I mean, she's in the book, but I don't know why she's on the cover. She's not a Star Trek son. The next cover is by Angel Hernandez, colors by Nick Fliardi, And it shows Alexander holding a batleth, and then in the reflection of the batleth, we can see Jake running at him, screaming. And then the retail incentive cover by Andy Price is definitely the funnier one. It shows Q and Q Jr. playing three-dimensional chess. Q Jr. is reading a Star Trek book. It looks like a novel, but it has the old gold key font on it where it says Star Trek. And then it seems like this is, I don't know, maybe an illusion or something. And then we see what might be Trelane's fingers snapping in the foreground. It's kind of ties in with the whole Pleroma storyline from the Star Trek 2022 series. So I like that cover. If I still bought physical, I would try to get that one. All right, so the writing staff, art staff, everything is exactly the same from the last issue, so I won't run through that. So we'll just continue with the story. So Commander Mariner makes a shipwide announcement stating that Captain Ducat has been killed. She rallies the troops and tells the crew of the Avery that it is do or die time and that they will be making their last stand here against the Breen. She then orders Alexander to help out in sickbay. He says that he just can't do it, and he runs off. Jake and Nog get permission to chase after him, while Little Q is ordered to join Mariner in the ready room. Jake and Nog catch up with Alexander, and he tells the Star Trek sons that he is unsure of his place in the universe. He thought he could just stay in this universe and skip facing the music of his bad deeds in the Prime universe. However, now he feels like that would not be the right thing because it would dishonor the people that he has hurt and or killed. Jake thinks that having a sparring match in the holodeck will clear the Klingon's mind, and they do fight. Jake gets his butt kicked, and it seems to kind of do the trick, and Alexander says that he's made up his mind, and he will help anybody he can here, and then when they return home, he'll do the same thing there. Meanwhile, back in the ready room, Mariner tells QJ, which is what they keep calling him, that he needs to get his powers back and what can they do to help. QJ points out that he lost his powers once before, but that was some sort of test that his father was having him do in order to learn the value of other lives. He thinks that all he has to do is apologize and maybe he'll get his powers back. Later on the bridge, everyone has gathered just as the huge Breen ship, the Chimera, looms ahead of them. And this thing is massive, much, much, much bigger than the ship itself. QJ takes this time to apologize, even going as far as saying that the reason why he brought the other Trek sons to this universe was for a selfish purpose. He just wanted to have some friends. Even after this revelation, nothing happens. He keeps snapping his fingers, and it is still non-effective. With that, the Breen arrive on the bridge and start firing at the Starfleet crew. Several crew are injured, including Morn, and the console that will eject the rigged warp core is also damaged. QJ at some point claps, and this turns his uniform blue. So perhaps he's a clapper and not a snapper. He tests this out with one clap, and suddenly the Breen are gone, and he states that their ship is full of dilithium, so they'll have no more reason to attack Starfleet. Another clap, all the injured on the Avery have suddenly been healed, including Shaw and Morn. And then there's lots of hugs and thank yous all around, as QJ does one more clap to leap home. QJ finds himself in the dark void with his father. Q tells him that QJ has done what no other Q ever would do, and that will make the continuum the better for it. And then we have an epilogue. The Theseus and Defiant must be back on Deep Space Nine because both Worf and Sisko are there, along with the Star Trek sons. They're there to celebrate the 6th birthday anniversary of Sisko's daughter. Alexander says that he made a deal with Starfleet to join the medical division in order to avoid jail time. Nog is happy now and inspired by the prospects of serving aboard the Burton. And then Jake's passion for writing has also been rekindled. Sisko tells his son just how proud he is. And then we see that there's a clap from somebody just off screen. The end.
Now, was that Jake, you know, like hitting his father's back, making a clapping sound? Or is it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those like just weird, because it looks like Jake's like looking straight down the camera and then you hear a clap. And so you're like,
right,
is any of this real? You know, is this like one of those Twilight Zone things where, you know, they never really made it home and this is just a fantasy that they're doing. And then QJ's clapping again and they'll leap again. I don't know. It was a weird ending with the clap.
Interesting thought. I don't think it's right. But interesting.
No, I don't think it's right either, but it's just weird that he's like looking right down the barrel and then you see another clap and then it's like the end. So
right.
What was that clap?
Good question. So I don't know whether they'll ever pick this up again. Probably not. It leaves the door open. You never know.
I guess it depends on how many books did they sell. if they sold enough books, I bet we get Sons of Star Trek 2.
There you go. May I offer my main opinion on how this wrapped up?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Okay. So ultimately, they did what they can always do. They play the trump card, which is Q Jr. gets his powers back, which he had all the way along until the beginning of the last issue 3.
Right.
So it's just if you always go back and play that card, it's like, well, of course. I mean, that you could have known from the beginning of the book that's what was going to happen. I mean, Q's all powerful. It reminds me of that Predator versus Wolverine series we just read and reviewed recently, where ultimately, well, yeah, Logan used his ability to regenerate, ridiculously powerful ability to regenerate, and then just let the Predator activate his mini-nuke because he knew he was going to come back. So it's like, okay. It's almost like, okay, was that hard? Really? It's almost a little like a cop-out. So it wasn't that challenging. As a matter of fact, some of the challenges they ran into was almost a little artificial. And in the end, they just said, yeah, Q just snapped his finger or clapped his hands. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, I did hate how it ended because so basically it means that all the stuff that Nog did with the regrowing dilithium, rigging up the ejection core, you know, every little thing they did didn't really matter, right? Because the Breen just show up, shoot everybody in the guts, blow up the console, and it was all for another. And they're like, oh, well, we're dead. And then Q just like starts clapping and it's all good.
Exactly. Clap on, clap off.
Yeah. So did his apology do anything, or could he have just clapped from the beginning and he always would have had the powers?
Good question. I think that wouldn't have happened, but because in the end we see that, you know, Q was behind the whole thing.
Right.
So, or Q and the Continuum were behind the whole thing. So Q could have done anything. Q and the Continuum could have done anything to him. So it could have been where they just switched it to being clapping instead of snapping. Or they just really made him humanized like they did to Q in that one episode of TNG. Right. I don't know. Good question. I don't know.
Well, and it was an episode of Voyager that
good question.
Q Jr. didn't have powers, right?
Right. Yeah. And they talk about that in this issue.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of dialogue going on in this issue. Really, I think the whole series boils down to one of the pages when they're on the holodeck. And basically, that Batliff duel that Jake forced with Alexander, It really, in that, he's saying, basically, you got to figure out what's important for you, which, and that has to be your motivation. And that came right out of City Slickers, the movie City Slickers. So basically, Jake is going off and doing a psychoanalysis of Alexander and Nog and himself to some degree. And he's, you know, just talking, pontificating, just like his father. And he basically says, it's why we're fighting now. We're fighting for the things that matter to us. So basically, you got to figure out what matters to you and then fight for it, which is
right.
Kind of, isn't that what Jack Palance said?
Maybe.
In City Slickers, basically. You got to figure out what's important to you. And then Jack Palance can't tell Billy Crystal what that is. You got to figure it out for yourself. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, and he did that one, right? He did his finger out with one.
That's right. Exactly. His glove.
Like, what is that? You know, that's right. Okay, now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. So basically, you know, get over yourself, figure out what matters to you the most, and go after that. You know, protect that.
Right.
And then move on into adulthood is the bottom line. So.
But yeah, 100% of what you're talking about. That is all four of them. That was what they needed to do.
Right. Stop whining about themselves and move on.
Right.
Get moving. You're a little too self-obsessed, kids. I don't know, but I'm saying that as an old guy.
It is weird that because Nog in the show, he had such a great story arc, you know, mm-hmm. you know, he had the PTSD, mm-hmm. you know, survivor's guilt, and he was maimed. And, you know, I mean, yep. I thought his story arc was so great. And then when the show ended, you know, he was Starfleet through and through. You know, I did not like how at the beginning of this issue, suddenly he's like, oh, everybody only wants to talk about Sisko, you know, and I'm just like the token Ferengi, you know, that kind of thing, which mm-hmm. is not in line with his character at the end of Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
I agree.
But as far as Jake, you know, suddenly doubting, you know, is there any purpose in writing? I get mm-hmm. that, because, I mean, his yeah. dad ascended to another plane of existence and left him, you know. So, yeah, you know, maybe writing isn't the best use of my time, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I thought yeah. that part was good.
Right.
But, yeah, in the end, they all find their place. Alexander, he's going to go the very non-Klingon route and heal people instead of hurting them. Mm-hmm. Which you got to think there has to be Klingon doctors and Klingon scientists and stuff. So
of course. So that's good. That's a change for the character,
right?
So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I liked the series overall, except for I do not like what you said. The QJ is able to just fix it with one clap, and then suddenly
yeah.
all's great in the whole universe.
Right. And it was getting a little schlocky in parts. Like definitely when Q was talking to Q Jr. and just like gushing about, what was he gushing about? About you caring about other people and wanting people to care about you. Oh, I'm so proud of you. It's like, mm-hmm. oh my God. People who need people. Mm-hmm. Oh, the luckiest people. Oh my God. It's just making my skin crawl.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I mean, that is nice, but it's Q. I mean, they're godlike. They can do anything they want to. And they have to care about feelings. And becoming buddies and caring about lesser beings. I don't know. It just struck me as a little overboard.
Right.
But I'm Mr. Negative. Sorry.
And as far as timing goes, when does this take place? So it takes place after the events that we're reading now in Star Trek and Defiant. So after
it's after the Day of Blood. It's definitely after the Day of Blood.
The Day of Blood, but before the next series starts.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
And they were gone for how long? Or do they? I mean, because Sisko says, "Welcome back, Jake." So, I mean, obviously, they must have been gone for some time in the real universe.
Well, okay, hold on. Q is transitioning them back and forth between dimensions. He can go back in time. I mean, he's like Doctor Who, timey-wimey. Sure. He can take them right back to the minute that they left for their years of adventure. You know?
Did he?
I don't know. But the fact is, you made a good point. They're on Deep Space Nine. They're doing the birthday thing. So this is before Sisko left again, right?
You would think so. Before he went to Pleroma and before...
Well, and probably before the dinosaur planet, too, probably.
Oh, yeah, right. Maybe. Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this would have had to take place right after the Red Path series.
The Day of Blood stuff, I think so. Yeah, I think so. And especially since Alexander was in prison.
Right.
For his role in Day of Blood.
It does kind of stink that he gets out scot-free.
Yeah, they should keep him in for, you know, a decade maybe?
I don't know about that, but I mean, he did kill people.
I mean, yes, he did.
Yes, he was brainwashed and stuff, but still.
Yeah. But this is the Federation. This is future Star Trek, and right. You know, where everything is ultra liberal. So not only do you not have capital punishment, but you know, supposedly they can rehabilitate people. They have ways of rehabilitating people that aren't requiring frontal lobotomies. So, and the idea that they would be open to something like this seems pretty logical, I guess.
Well, one last thing about this page at the end, the epilogue. Why does it say happy birthday versary? That seems...
I don't know. When you said that, I was wondering, what? But you're right. It does say that. Birthday?
Sari. It doesn't
have...
Oh,
that's her name. That's her name?
Ah, Sarah? Maybe. Would make more sense.
Okay, yeah.
All right, yeah.
I didn't even notice that banner.
Okay.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Sarah. All right, there was no comma, so I was thrown off.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I feel silly now.
So Alexander is going to be a healer for Starfleet? He's got his Klingon outfit still.
Yeah.
Which, mind you, he had the Klingon outfit in it when he was in the prison. So maybe he came directly from prison?
I don't.
And so he hasn't had a chance to change into anything else?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter.
So you wanted to talk about the Breen ship? You loved it?
No.
I think it was.
Okay, when the Breen ship does come on, arrive at where the Avery is, it is huge. And they've got a shot of it that makes the Avery look so tiny. And then it's a full page thing. And then the Avery's really tiny and off in the distance to some degree. And then the panel is like right next to where the Chimera comes in. And it just totally reminded me of the Narada.
Right.
And the fact that this thing is so big, you can only show parts of it. And stuff is going out the front of it. So it kind of looks like it's, like the Narada.
When you mentioned the Narada earlier, I was like, oh my God, you're right. It did totally remind me of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even when it shows them like being tractor beamed in,
mm-hmm.
the Avery is tiny. I mean, you can't even see it compared to the rest of this ship.
Yep.
So maybe is this the planet that Q's talking about? Q Jr. is talking about when he says, I loaded them up with dilithium and now they can move their planet. Maybe this is what he was talking about because it's so big.
I thought, Well, yeah. Okay. So a couple things. The first thing is the backstory of the Breen, I thought, was that they were kind of like a reflection of the Federation. But instead of, so they were made up of many different kinds of people and many different planets. But instead of embracing the differences that all the different species had, you know, Idic kind of thing, they did just the opposite. Everybody has to wear these outfits, the same outfits, and you're covering up your differences for them to be able to be together in one entity. So it's kind of like a kind of sort of a reverse Federation in some ways.
Right.
And in this dimension, they're saying, So Q says, I gave them all the dilithium they could ever want. And so now they're going to, now they have enough to move their planet. And now there's going to be no more problem with the Federation because they're basically going to move their planet away from Federation space. I mean, that's what it makes it sound like.
It's like, hold on.
At first I was saying, this is a total BS retcon of what the Breen are. And then I thought, okay, fine. It's a different dimension. The Breen could have a different backstory. But let's say they did have a different backstory. And they are located on just one planet. Why would they? What? How could one planet bring the entire Federation to its knees like this?
Right.
I don't get it. And then if they got this much power and this much leverage, why would they move their planet? Just take over things and kick out all the Federation people and stay where you're at. I don't know.
How do you move a planet?
Well, when you have a ship, okay, so this is the other part of it. When you've got a ship that has like, I don't know, 10, 15 warp cores from Federation ships, and you can pull all that energy, I mean, is it going to be a tow truck to tow the planet or something? Or I don't know. They just didn't. I guess it doesn't matter that much because what they're just trying to get across is, hey, everything's fine, everybody. Yay.
Right.
Yeah, Q clapped his hands and everything's fine. So don't think about it too much. Let's just move on to the end. Don't stare at it too hard. So maybe it doesn't matter, but it's like, yeah, exactly. How do you move a planet?
Maybe he was talking about that ship. That's the one. Maybe it was a typo or something. Because he says they need to move their planet out of this system. Yeah, I don't know, man. Exactly.
He said this system. What do you mean by this system?
Right.
Their planet is not.
Were they already there?
Well, yeah. When he says system, that usually is a solar, you know, a star system, right?
Yeah.
All the planets around a system. So I thought the planet they were over was the planet that had all the dilithium on it. I thought that's why they were fighting for that. They had to keep the Breen from getting it. All that dilithium, because then they can do whatever they want. So anyway,
yeah, I didn't.
So the Breen planet shouldn't be in that solar system. It should be someplace else. But were they meaning out of this quadrant? Then they should have said quadrant, not this system. But
it doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
But now that you mentioned the Narada, I mean, it totally makes sense. I mean, if this thing was going to come and mine the planet for dilithium, because the Narada was originally a mining ship too.
Ship, so. But they said nothing about that. All they said is it's the biggest, baddest warship they got, and they like to collect Federation warp cores, Starfleet warp cores. Anyway. Another minor thing, they refer to the Breen forces as an army. The Breen army will be here. And it's like, army? I mean, yes, they can transport people over in boarding efforts because they want to get the war cores undamaged. But this is more a naval force, right? I mean, ships fighting each other. It's a naval force. It's not an army. So I don't know. I just thought the wording was unusual, unexpected.
I get you.
And I really like how Jake and Nog enter the Mariner's ready room holding hands. That's nice on page 13.
Oh, they're not holding hands. I don't think they're holding hands. I think Jake's a little further.
I know. I agree with you. But I'm just saying, why did they draw it that way? So they're swinging their arms the way you normally do when you walk. You swing your arms a little bit. And it just so happens that Nog's left hand and Jake's right hand just happen to be in swing, so they kind of align.
From that point of view, yeah.
So I know that's what it was. But I'm like, look at this going, why did they draw it that way? That's I mean, they're making it look like they're holding hands. I just had a comment on it.
Maybe it was.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe.
Good for them. I mean, even though that's never been established in any other canon.
I agree. So the first time QJ claps his hand because he thought everybody did a great job gunning down the first group of Marines that came on. So he was like applause. And then his uniform turns blue. It's like, why was that what happened?
Right.
Why'd they pick his uniform going from because red and black to blue people. And black?
So instead of commanding people, he's now helping people.
So he's now medical.
Yeah.
As opposed to sciences, exactly. Which use both use blue. Okay. Okay. I thought that was a little odd. And you know maybe that explains it, but I think they could have done something better than that, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, why did he even clap? It just seemed kind of weird to clap at that moment anyways.
Yeah, and the only I think I said my only explanation.
Yeah, no,
I thought they need to grab. You know, they did a great job gunning down the first guys, so he's clapping. Hey, yeah, good for us. A little yes, like a Data kind of yes. I'm emotional and I'm happy with what we just did.
So I do wonder is Tuvix still Tuvok and Neelix mixed together? So Voyager still went out on its Delta Quadrant.
I think so.
Came back.
I think so, but apparently Janeway made the decision not to separate them,
right? Because it would be murder.
Which is, well, that's a good point. But God brought you two into the world as separate beings, and it was technology that threw you together. So we're going with God's plan, not yours, or not random chance,
right?
So sorry, Tuvix, you're dead.
No, that's and how I it do went in our universe.
Yeah, that's how it went in our universe. And I do like, I think that actor that they picked to do the Tuvix character, I think he's quite good.
Oh, yeah.
Episode.
He did a good job being both of them.
Yep.
I really don't have anything else. How about you?
I really don't have anything else either. I was hoping for a little better, maybe a less sugary sweet ending. But it was good. It was good.
Right. I would have just liked some of their other plans to actually have mattered as just being time killers.
Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, that whole thing about them being on the holodeck, that's mostly filler.
Right.
I mean, yeah, there was some exposition going on. And then in the end, Jake was able to do a City Slickers thing, but that was filler.
Right. Well, everything was. Everything except the clapping was filler. I mean, I guess it just, Nog needed all that stuff with the dilithium just to get his mojo back, but none of it really mattered because nothing he did was even working, right?
Because ultimately it's QJ's clapping that just makes everything better.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
All right. So we're done.
I think we're done, man. That was a good series. Enjoyed it.
I liked it.
What are we doing next week? Next episode.
Next episode, we're doing two books. One is the special Star Trek Celebrations, which is their Pride Month book, which has a bunch of little short stories from different eras of Star Trek. And then we're doing...
Maybe Nog and Jake will be in there.
I doubt it. And then the other one we'll do is the annual, the 2024 annual for the Star Trek ongoing that's going on now. So, and it looks like it has Data or Lore on the cover, so it'll be kind of cool to see what they've been up to.
Mm-hmm.
While the Theseus and the Defiant are off doing their thing.
Right.
Separate things.
So when they went off to Pleroma, they didn't necessarily take Data's body.
Right.
With
they left
them.
It.
Hmm, interesting. Cool. Okay, so that, okay, I'm looking forward to it more now.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess this so, explains how he gets back up and running.
There you go.
So, that so that's seeing Star Trek Nemesis.
There you go.
Okay, great. Anything else?
Nothing.
Nothing. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week with those two books.
Excellent. Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.